So moving on, the question is, what's the visit about, really? You know, is it about tourism? Man, it's not about tourism. But is it because Mary Magdalene really wanted the Queen to come this year? And her last year? No. Don't think Mary Magdalene's pressure was that important. Is it because the Queen really wants to visit Ireland? I think it's one of the few countries in the world she hasn't visited, probably North Korea. But one of the most ones you would be welcome in. But,
I know that
should
be welcome there.
So, that's probably not the reason either, is it? So, let me put this to you, this idea. Ireland is a problem child in Europe. Ireland is a problem child. And the reason it's a problem is because if you walk down the street now, I'm walking here at Patrick Street, I met 100 people on the street, and I asked every single one of them, what do you feel about Palestine? Do you support the Palestinians as you think that they're maybe very good morality? And 90 people out of 100 in Ireland will say, I support Palestinians. And why is that? Because we're very informed about Palestine? Is it because we've read a lot about Palestine and stuff like that? Or is it something else? Is it because, instinctively, because of our own experience in history, like our own knowledge of history, we know the side oppressed against the oppressor? Now, I'm not saying that we're perfect, because obviously there are lots of issues in Ireland about the way people behave and other ways. But in terms of international imperialism and in terms of war, every opinion poll ever taken here, every survey ever done, obviously this very high level of consciousness that it's not right for the big powerful countries to kick the shit out of the small little ones. It's not right for people to be oppressed because of their ethnic origins and stuff like that. That's right, big international capital. So Ireland has been a problem, and Ireland hadn't played its full role in the second European imperialist struggle. It hadn't played its role. And we know that in the heart of hearts, that the ruling class in this country really want to be part of the Big Boys Club. They want to be full members. They want to send the Irish Army where they're told. They want to get the kudos for doing the business, if you like. And they've never been able to do it 100% because there's always been that problem that they can't sell it to the population here. When Shannon Airport was being used in the war, there's huge opposition in this country to it. Even now, people are opposed to it. Every opinion poll demonstrates people oppose the use of Shannon Airport. Now, they did use it, and they have used force to protect us. But the point is that the opposition exists and continues to exist on a continuous basis, always around issues of imperialism. So this whole process, if like we're going through at this time, Obama coming and the Queen coming, is about kind of normalizing things. It's about trying to get people to accept the past is the past. And to draw a line, if you like. Draw a line there and say, oh, that's past history in Ireland, that doesn't matter anymore, that's all resolved now. And it's time for us to mature and grow up and accept our role in our mature, grown-up society and become part of the imperialist stuff and to play a role. Part of that has been the rehabilitation of the idea of people participating in the British Army in the First World. That's all part of a similar kind of idea that we need to be reintegrated into the imperialist stuff. Now, we were only a colony before, and we played a little bit of a role, but there's an awful second history in this country of people not doing what they're told, you know, they won't wear second poppies in November when they're told that, you know, they're honouring the Irish of the British Army. You're told off for remembering 1916, you know, that is a minor event in history that's not important really. We're told off constantly for this stuff in the media and stuff. Despite all of that, it like shines through, like it's like a current that can't be killed out. And every time they try to, you know, it reasserts itself. And it reasserts itself in the anti-war movement, in the left, in people's daily ideas about the way the world works. And that that problem, they want it to go away, and they think by this love bombing and the Queen coming and stuff, they'll actually achieve that over time. I don't think they will, but it's important that because they're trying to do that, we say, no, we don't want to be part of your fucking club. We don't want to endorse imperialism. We're opposed to this, we're opposed to our institutions, and we're opposed to this idea. And that's another very strong reason to oppose the Queen's visit. I could go on a bit about our history with Britain, but I mean, I don't think the need for me to go into that, because I think people are well aware of the history here, and they're also well aware that the British Army is still in Ireland, basically, essentially. There's still a few Republican troops in the country, and that they de facto Britain put its hand in here. I mean, I don't need to go into detail, I think people are well aware of that. And that's not a thing we're supposed to ignore, by the way. This is not a thing that's not supposed to be relevant to our lives and stuff like this. So, who exactly is the... I want to say that about the amount of security being used for this. Because there were 10,000, according to their statement for yesterday, 10,000 Gardaí and soldiers being deployed to secure the visit. And Obama's visit. Although Obama's basically flying into the country for about 5 hours of her. He's going to be gone in a flash, so I don't know if all the security is going to make it. It's more to do with the Queen and the 4 days of this. There's 10,000 guards and soldiers. Now, earlier I talked about the way money is spent by the ruling class and in terms of their priorities, in terms of what should be spent on it. But now I'm going to talk a little bit about security priorities. And anarchists, obviously, are not fans of the police and oppressive institutions. Both for a reason of our personal experiences, because of this, but also because of the nation. But I know there's a big debate about the police tonight, but I'm going to make a few little points. And a good parallel to draw with the current situation is something that happened very recently in Manhattan, where I live, where a young woman and child were murdered in a fire, firebombing of a house. And the woman having threatened constantly, we've seen the stuff in the media about the detection and receiving threats and stuff like that, but that very day that the house was firebombed, her father had approached the local Gardaí and said she received a specific threat that source that she was going to be burned, that he would burn the house, etc. And now Manhattan isn't a huge place, right? And we have a full time guard station. I know because the guards regularly drive down my roads and foot patrol even in the area. But there was no security put in that house that night. You know, there was a specific threat that woman was going to be burned that night, and had she had this, receiving numerous threats. Now compare that with the idea that 10,000 Gardaí and soldiers will be deployed to protect the Queen. That sort of resources. Now that examples here what precisely the role of the police and the army is in our society. It is not to protect that woman and her child from a man, it is to protect the powerful and the money elite in the country. That is a good example. And the parallel example I want to give is a number of years ago was a similar thing happened in Limerick. There was a firebomb attack on a woman's car with two kids in it. And someone from Limerick at the time was complaining to me about it and said, Jesus Christ, you know, they were actually in Rossport in County Mayo, and there were 250 guards on duty in Rossport in County Mayo to protect Shell's right to build a pipeline against the wishes of the local people through the area. 250 guards on duty in Mayo. In Rossport, it's tiny. I mean, the population is not a lot more than 250 people there. You know, the policing level, the proportions are quite high. Whereas in Limerick, there was a noticeable lapse in security in that area where the attack occurred. And it was a good contrast to draw, again, in terms of the poor and the working class versus the interests of the rich and the interests of the establishment. Now, I'm not calling for more police and stuff like that. I think that your best protection is good neighbours and stuff like that, but that's another debate for another day. So, I want to talk a little bit about how we oppose the business, because I think this is probably the most important thing in terms of addressing this audience here, because obviously the people here are opposed to this, but I think most people who come here will be opposed to this. And we'll be talking a lot with other people who are opposed to this and the ideas they have about how it should be opposed. And I've heard lots of stuff about this. And I want to first address a little thing I heard on from sections of the left, who said they wouldn't participate in any protest because any protest against the Queen would be inherently sectarian. Then how is it sectarian to protest against imperialism? It's a bizarre notion, but I think it's a couple. There's some elements who are going to be organizing protests who don't like and who don't to be associated with, so we're not going to do anything. That's fair enough. That's their choice to make, that they have a right to make that choice. But don't come knocking on our door screaming that we have to be able to demonstrate against the next dictator, the next president that comes along when you're this is quite an easy one to do. I mean, you're not going to get anywhere near us. I was for the second placard, you know. It's not like you're going to do a huge demonstration. It's as important that your bias is further in opposition to it. The other element, though, is we've got to bear in mind, and this is very important, and this is a conversation I was having with Ted actually a couple of weeks ago. And what we were talking about was how would this be seen up north? And not specifically how it would be seen by Catholic working class people up north, but how it would be seen by Protestant working class people up north. And I think that's a very important thing we've got to bear in mind here, right? Is because anarchists want to see an end to British imperialism, and anarchists want to see an end to the Baron. Okay, and how that could be achieved is a big discussion in itself. But one way it won't be achieved is that we will never be able to force Protestant workers, I don't know, no interest in forcing working class Protestants into United Ireland against their will. We've no interest in doing that. We want to win them to the idea of the United Socialist Ireland. And I think people can be won to that, and have been won to the idea of it in the past. There's some very, very good examples of common struggle across the sectarian divide, if you like it, when people engage around economic struggle. And the time that actually unionism was always at the weakest was when people made common cause economically. And where people became, Protestant workers became open to the idea that there was an idea of a socialist United Ireland. So I was talking about this with Ted, and I heard a radio interview by Teddy Gorman. Was it Teddy Gorman? And he went to Belfast, and his specific task in going to Belfast was interviewing people about the royal wedding. Now, you might say, what was I doing listening to interviews about the royal wedding? For shame. But I was driving along on the van, and I just came on, right? And I was mildly curious about, because he specifically said that we're going to the Falls Road, and we're going to the Shank Road, and we're going to ask people about what they feel about the royal wedding. I said, that would be good for a laugh anyway. So I listened anyway. I missed the Falls Road section of it, but I heard the Shankill Road section, which was the section which was more interesting to me. But at the last question he asked about the royal wedding, of course, people were various levels of enthusiasm around it. I have to say that while the working class people were far more enthusiastic than the few English working class people I heard that about it, which is interesting in itself. But on the Shankill Road, they interviewed a lot of women, and they were all, of course, very happy about the ones that were interested were quite excited about the royal wedding. And the last question he asked, each person was, how do you feel about the Queen going to the South? How do you feel about the Queen going down South? And universally, and this is interesting, because almost 99% of the answers were along the lines of, oh sure, Mary McAleese comes here all the time, and we make her welcome, and they should make the Queen feel welcome down there too. And I thought to myself, can't do it, can't make the Queen welcome. You know, it'd be like people being interviewed in Alabama, you know, African Americans, and saying, we hope you make Obama feel welcome. Can't make him feel welcome. Have to protest. But, and to the point that someone made me to today, I don't want to see her killed on the streets of Cork. I don't want to see the Tyndall Institute burnt down with the Queen inside it. Why? Not that I would mourn, not for 1 minute, not that I would be sad about her death. But because how it would be perceived amongst those people on the Shankill Road. And at the end of the day, in this country, the constituency probably that we have to address, and it's important never to forget, obviously, the constituency is the most oppressed, obviously, the Catholic world set in the north, but the constituency that we have to win, the hardest constituency that we have to win, if you like, is Protestant workers in the north. And if, by having all riot in the south, to get it off our chest, the issue of the Queen's visit, we thought we were affecting change, we would be very mistaken. Because all we would do is we would alienate those people from our argument. So we're going to have a process. We're going to make all the points that we're making, political points we're making. But I'd be very reluctant to think about engaging in violence. And now, I say that with my own political background taken into account, but also because of the anarchist backgrounds of assassinating kings and queens over the years. You know, it's not an unusual thing for anarchists to do at a particular point in anarchist history, but it stopped. And the reason it stopped is because anarchists realized, you know, decapitating the ruling class, actually, one person or two people or 10 people, 20 people, actually affect change at all. It merely meant that somebody else stepped into their place. And the person who stepped into their place generally said, these fuckers, you murdered my uncle or whatever. you're going to pay for it, though. And generally, they got away with doing a lot of repression in that context, you know. So, I'm not against people killing kings and queens, but I haven't morally condemned them or anything. But in practical terms, it would be a mistake, I think, if someone gets up to the queen. No, it's not within my power to stop people doing it if it's going to happen. But I would say that it's important that we're seeing the protest, it's important that we're vocal in our protest, we're probably making propaganda on the protest. But that's what they're about. It's about a message, essentially, rather than about any kind of violent opposition to the queen. The final thing I want to do, I'll finish with a wee quote from Conley. Conley is my man, if you like. And because he did such a lot of very good work in opposing George V, the last rise of it, to the 26 counties, I should say, because we've had plenty of rises tomorrow, which have met with various levels of opposition. So Conley said this, and what he was saying was essentially he was kind of tying all the elements of the reason for opposition together, but he was also making a statement about our ruling class here. And that's the important thing, is that what I propose to rise is that our first target has to be our rulers here. Now, I know they're ruling on behalf of the IMF and the ECB, but they're actually the people who come up into contest with regularly. So here's what he had to say anyway, and it's a good piece of lesson. He's a very good teacher. Fellow workers, stand by the dignity of your class. All these parading rioties, all this insolent aristocracy, all these grovelling, dirt-eating capitalist traders, all these are but signs of a disease in any social state. Diseases which arise as it brings to a head and stews in all its nastiness before our horrified eyes. I think we can agree, moving there. Whereas the recognition of the disease is the first stage towards its cure, so that we may rid our social state of its political and social diseases, we must recognize the elements of corruption. Hence, in bringing them all together and exposing their unity, even a rise to this may help us to understand, and understanding help us to know how to destroy the royal, aristocratic and capitalistic classes who live upon our labour. Their workshops, their lands, their mills, their factories, their ships, their railways must be voted into our hands, who alone use them. Public ownership must take the place of capitalist ownership. Social democracy replaces political and social inequality. The sovereignty of labour must supersede and destroy the sovereignty of birth and the monarchy of capitalism. And I'm going to leave it to Conley, and I think he sums up precisely our message too. And it's nice to dovetail with that piece of history. I'll leave it at that, and we'll have a chat.
Okay, Jim, thanks very much for that talk, and it's now open to the floor if anybody wants to.